Hello and welcome to Think Grand, today, 1st of December 2011, and I'm your host John Stabler, and with me as usual my co-hosts Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And Trevor J. Williams.
Hello.
What a busy week it's been, especially dealing with the Baczynski affair after it blew up. What do you think of that, Steve?
Baczynski affair?
Yeah.
It's been very interesting. I've enjoyed following it on Twitter this week and, you know, seeing our good friend, young Mr. Rees Morgan, fighting the good fight and sticking it to the man. It's been good.
It's been it's like almost the new Twitter joke trial in a way. It was that's what kind of publicity it got. Mm. I think. What about you, Trev? Were you expecting a bit more?
I've been loving it. The way that Rees has just become a sort of celebrity pen
for the second time.
Yeah. Yeah. Look who else is mentioning me. Oh, yeah. Darrow Breen, bitches.
He was loving it. And fair play to him, you know. He's done a good job, I think. You know, it's... at the end of the day, you know, you can't... I'm not patronising him at all, but you can't forget his age. You know, he's a young lad, and he's writing...
Steve,
you know, good piece of work.
You can't just say, it's like saying, I'm not racist, but...
No.
You just said, I'm not patronising him, but...
I'm not patronising him. I'm genuinely in awe of the fact that he's...
Achieved so much,
yeah. At such a young age.
Hmm. Do you think, you know, is that like a relative comment or just in general?
How do you mean?
Well, do you feel that you've achieved nothing and he's achieved loads?
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to check.
But, you know, could he be the Macaulay Culkin of the, you know, sceptical world? Sorry, Reese.
I think when we were chatting to him, one of the things that he was so chuffed about is that the weapon he felt like he had in his back pocket in all of this is, I got nothing. Go ahead and try and sue me. I'm a teenager. I've got nothing to lose. And all they had was, there was a response saying, well, when you're trying to get a job in the future and they Google your name and it comes up that you've been sued. Well, no. When they Google his name, there's going to be Stephen Fry, Darrow Breen, James Randi, all these other people saying that he's bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got nothing.
And him eating pizza off of Ben Goldacre's chest, you know, just those images as well. But yeah, that's, you know, good luck.
Thankfully miss.
Sorry, it's just when you said that, you know, the weapon he had in his back pocket, I thought you were going to say that you were stood too close behind him or something. But luckily we avoided that one, really.
Okay.
So anyway.
The definition of avoiding goes a bit strange then.
That's the joke. Anyway, so this, who's going to go with the story first this week?
Well, are you not going to say, hello, lovely listeners, aren't you wonderful, and don't you all smell lovely? And by the way, you can send us comments at some various places and you can listen at some other stuff.
I can do that halfway through the podcast. There's no reason why that needs to be done right at the beginning. You know, you're one of those people that you don't like change. You know, as soon as something's not the same as last week, you panic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, I have my memory is for shit. All I have is routine now.
If it wasn't for the fact that you watched the sun coming up, you wouldn't know to have breakfast.
That's right. I don't have breakfast.
Oh, okay.
It's true. Got high blood sugar in the mornings.
Go on then, do a story, Trev.
What shall I choose? Oh, yeah. Sort of a review and mention of The Iron Lady. Have you heard about this film?
Oh, I thought you were going to say she was dead then.
More jokes about that later. But I take it this
there
is...
was about him much rejoicing.
But this is obviously, what, like a biography about Lady Thatcher.
Meryl Streep, isn't it?
Yeah. And Meryl Streep, it seems, has done a wonderful job. If you look at the thing as a fictional film, then it's wonderful. But if you look at it as a piece of history, then it's failing to mention a whole bunch of fairly important stuff. And it's just deeply worrying. And it seems like nobody's mentioned it to Meryl Streep.
Well, I mean, she's not responsible for the storyline, obviously, so, you know.
That's true, but you know what? The way it goes these days, there are press junkets, and the stars are more responsible for the promotion of the film than the director and the writer, who are far more responsible for the content, obviously.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, it is an interesting question, but, you know, what level of responsibility would she carry? You know, given the chance that it's probably in her contract that she has to do a certain amount of publicity for it. And I'm sure she's done a wonderful job. Maybe she'll get nominated for some stuff. But she's portraying a woman who has done some monstrous things, and she's managing to get the sympathy of the character. Yeah, you know, the sympathetic aspect of the character. I wasn't aware that there was one, you know, but apparently.
Well, yeah.
Because they portray her dementia, her encroaching senility in the film, right at the beginning. That sort of sets her up as a character that we can show some sympathy for. And you would think, if there was anybody from Britain anywhere involved in the making of the film, those preconceptions would be shattered. But, worryingly, it doesn't seem to be the case.
Isn't that rather cynical, thinking that the only way you can get a character to, you know, to get the audience to have any sympathy for a character is to basically start the movie from the end, and you see that, you know, they're in an unfortunate situation before rewinding to where they're an absolute twat?
Well, maybe. I haven't seen Countdown, but that's the one set in the bunker with Hitler.
Yeah.
Maybe they paint him as a slightly misunderstood fella.
Maybe we'd root again, you know, for Captain Hook if we saw how the crocodile eats him at the start of the film, and then we'll be rooting for him to kick Peter Pan's ass all the way through the film. If you know.
That's actually going to be on over the holidays, I think, on Sky. They've filmed a Pan prequel. Where everything gets set up, and I wouldn't usually give a toss about any of that because I find the pantomime nature of it slightly annoying. But it's got Reese Ifans as Captain Hook, as the guy who will become Captain Hook. So I'm chuffed for that.
Could be interesting. Could be worth a watch.
Who's gonna play?
And it'll make me feel less politically uneasy than watching Margaret Thatcher. You know.
More importantly, who's gonna get the lead role as Shmi?
Bizarrely, Bob Hoskins again.
Yeah, again, exactly. Needs to be no one else. Going back just to the subject of the Thatcher film, though, I want to watch it because, you know, I was a child during her reign of terror, and I want to, you know.
Sorry, Steve. I'm just getting over the fact that you've kind of put us back on the highbrow track. Of all three of us, it was you.
Hey, what's your point?
Carry on. What
believe me. Believe me. I'm going to lower it massively when it comes to my story.
All right. Okay. Fair enough.
So don't worry about it.
Made the point that Captain Hook is a far more sympathetic character than Margaret Thatcher is. So now let's get back to the
story. Yeah. No. I genuinely, you know, I obviously lived through the Thatcher's 80s, but you know, I was a child at the time, and from a point of view of, you know, reminding myself why she is the axis of evil, then you know, I want to go and watch it, to be honest with you.
Do you not think, however, you know, I mean, when you use the words axis of evil, is that for, like, comedy effect? Or do you honestly think that she's as evil as Mussolini and Hitler?
I don't think she's far off, to be honest with you. Okay. Quite genuinely, I don't believe she's far off. Yeah. You know, she's,
In terms of genocidal, you know, numbers, you know.
I mean, obviously Hitler tops the ranks there, doesn't he, you know, and probably Stalin is number one, but
Maggie's third.
No. You're talking about numbers of death, obviously. I'm just talking about, you know, the effect that she's had on this country.
Redundancies. And, she beats Hitler for redundancies.
She beats Hitler for redundancies, yeah. Okay. Everyone worked in Nazi Germany.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, that's my point.
All right, no, fair enough. And we squeeze some comedy out of it, so don't worry about it. Trev, are we done on this, or did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I'm done. I just want to mention as well to the lovely listeners, I did just have a big hypo. I think I'm over it now, but things might go weird. I apologise if they do. But I had one last week, right in the middle, but I noticed that John edited it out, any mention of it, apart from when I came back, and then he said, your blood sugar sorted then.
Yeah,
And you know, so listener might think, what the hell? What's going on?
Well, you know, what happened basically was I thought I'd edit out the hypo because all me and Steve did was talk about rugby. But then when you came back, by the time I got to the bit where that happened, I was too lazy to edit it out. I just wanted to get it edited. So, but then again, Trev, I thought I didn't edit these podcasts.
Well, no. And the reason you don't is because you once asked a favour of Don Corleone on the occasion of his daughter's wedding. And you weren't showing a lot of respect to him, to be fair. And then once you got that horse's head in your bed, and the little note saying never edit a podcast again, son of a bitch, you know, you made an offer you couldn't refuse. Who would ask you to do that? Not me.
And talking of comedy, this brings me to our regular feature.
Hooray!
The funny thing is, I can accept a delay off Trev because there's like a 400 millisecond with the sound software. But Steve's got no excuse, to be honest. You're right there.
Whoop whoop, yeah.
Right, thank you. So, apologies for this if I stumble a bit as I'm reading them because I had to write them down on the train today because I've been very busy. But I think they're quality. So,
are they as good as last week's?
No. If I'm going to be honest, in my subjective opinion, I don't think they are as good. However, listeners may think otherwise. Stephen may think that it's the best one ever. And
you should be a compere. That is brilliant. Good evening, Cardiff. Welcome to this comedy night. And to be fair, they're a bit shit. Last week's was good. You should have been here last week. But this lot.
I didn't say they were shit. I said they're not as good.
I wasn't saying anything about the people you did a gig with. I was saying that you would paint people as being dreadful. Now, every listener knows that you cussed every single person you were up on stage with. Dan Mitchell, Rob Hughes, Chris Chopping. They were all shit compared to you. That's what he was saying, ladies and gentlemen.
No one actually believes this. And if they do, I'm going to edit it out. I got the power of the edit. Okay. I think, are you going first this, Steve?
It's my turn this week, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, right, here we go. So, story number one. A team of scientists has warned that Wi-Fi connected laptops too close to the gonads could damage sperm. The results showed that samples exposed to the radiation showed a significant decrease in motility and an increase in DNA fragmentation. Although a small sample size, 29 males giving 2 samples each. Fucking hell, 2 samples?
It wasn't one after the other, John, was it?
Well, you know, you want consistency, so maybe they had to be. Other scientists have said that the study was conducted well and called for further research. Story number 2. A group of Argentinian school kids copped an eye full of smut last week when their female teacher handed them a USB memory stick containing a couple of vids of her going hammer and tongs with her boyfriend. The error involved her copying 2 folders to their netbook, one containing study materials, the other entitled Vacation Holidays, which offered some explicit human biology lessons. And the final story, story number 3, it's Christmas time, and this year's highly anticipated Darwin Awards have been announced. There have been plenty of honourable mentions and strong competition for the outright winner. However, this year, the award goes to a Welsh girl. 21-year-old Hannah Edwards of Newport, South Wales, took herself out of the gene pool by paying more attention to her hair than basic electrical safety. Wanting to save time before her big Friday night out, she attempted to blow dry her hair while still enjoying a glass of Lambrini in the hot tub. The expected slip of the hand and lack of modern RCD protection bought her the top award for 2011. So there you go, guys. Those are the 3 stories. Are you going to go for number 1, the Wi-Fi affecting your sperm count? Are you going to go for number 2, Argentinian school smut on a USB stick? Or are you going to go for number 3, Welsh lass does good and wins the Darwin Award? Stephen.
You're right, they weren't as good as last week's ones.
Oh, you twat.
But, you see, now, this is a difficult one because I'm sure I would have seen it on the news about the Welsh lass. and I haven't seen anything on the news about it at all.
Well, hang on.
But I recall.
Just let me clarify. It would have happened. It could have happened at any time this year. I'm not saying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But I would recall that. I mean, that's, okay. That's quite a momentous occasion, and I don't recall seeing it in the news.
Momentous? Is that the height of news in Wales?
Well, I think it probably is, to be honest with you, yeah. You know, actually winning something. I think it probably rates right up there, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Now, Wi-Fi affecting your gonads. Now, that's a good story. I can go along with that, because, you know, you get all the stories, don't you, about mobile phones giving you brain tumours and all that sort of stuff. So the only thing which concerned...
Which are all bollocks, by the way.
Yeah, the only thing which concerned me about that story was, of course, the sample size being 29 men.
Do you not think you can make that much? What?
I set that one up for you, Trev. of 29 men, which, you know, who conducted the research?
It was... Hang on a second.
Sample size of 29 men. Why is that a pint?
I didn't put it in my rewrite, but I can tell you that it was US scientists. It was based in the US.
If you're doing any sort of study, I mean, 29 people is a bit pointless, really, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's completely pointless. Mm. Better than just making it up, like the.
Ooh, John!
Which. Hang on, I might have to cut that out. Okay,
yeah, but... You may have to cut that bit out, yeah.
All right, remind me.
And the teacher porn on the memory stick, it's so easy to do.
You sound like a man of experience.
The amount of kids I've given the electronic porn to.
I know,
anyway.
it's off the scale, Trev.
But not just normal porn, but your own porn as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to stick with my initial thought, and I'm going to go for the Welsh girl winning the Darwin Award, being the fake.
Okay, Trevor?
Okay. Now, I've got some reasons for thinking that the first one's a fake. The main reason is that if you made it up, then you might have been deciding whether to make it that the radiation... affects motility or sperm count, and that's why you've referred to it as both, because you said in the story it was just motility, and then when summing up you said the sperm count, so maybe okay. You made it up and made a little slip.
It wasn't just that, it was also DNA fragmentation, but I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Okay. But yeah, the idea that guys have to have chug out a handful and then go and slap their balls on a keyboard of a laptop and see if they can move the cursor around with their sack. And then after another half an hour, when they think they've got another little couple of strings in them, see what's happened. That is just nonsense. That's not going to tell you anything. But I think people are that stupid, so the story could have happened.
But I would point as well, just in defence of the story, there was no talk of timescales for how long it was in between the samples, was there?
Or... Should I tell you what I would have guessed? I would have guessed that they'd have actually just given the one sample and they'd have split it in two, but they would have said two samples from each.
Yeah, so I would have thought maybe one sample...
is enough.
Sans Wi-Fi and then one sample post...
They would have split it in half, put... One in, they're both in vitro.
Yeah.
Put one in front of the radiation and one without.
No, I'd rather have a vision of a guy sat in there with a laptop on his lap.
Slapping his gonads on the touchpad, trying to move the cursor up. It's only moving up a millimetre every time. I'm starting to get bruised, guys. But doing it once the sample's been given is pointless. Because how is that going to affect your sperm count? Because. Do you jack off into a cup and then keep the cup next to you while you are on the laptop, and then you want to use those sperm later for something?
Hang on a second. Oh dear, what a pity, they've gone all strange. I'm just rereading back through it. I'm looking for the word sperm count, and I think that you may have heard that yourself, and it's not in the story. Team of scientists has warned that Wi-Fi connection laptops...
When you were recapping, you said sperm count.
Okay. Well, I apologise. That was me... being creative. It does not say sperm count in there. It just says it affected the motility And so I apologise for misleading.
That's why I'm thinking it suggests to me that it was a make-up thing, because you thought about putting sperm count in there and then decided against it.
Nope, sorry, I apologise. It was me summing up. Okay. Being, you see, it's so easy to do.
But I don't think that one is the fake anyway. Okay. I think people will do utterly pointless studies like that. And as for a woman accidentally handing out porn, that does sound horribly likely. They all sound fairly likely, but I think that if you actually chose that a woman from South Wales died from an act of stupidity, fair enough, I'll give you that, that you want to celebrate that on a podcast created here in South Wales, where this woman will have died this year.
Hey, she could have been in my street.
It will be the worst, most crass insensitivity.
What, more so than the wheelchair rapist?
Even you. If it were real, you couldn't.
Listen, hang on. Before you make your mind up, Trev, right, just let me...
No. I'm doing that because I believe in you, John.
Okay.
I have faith in your judgment and your character. Well,
I would really hate to disappoint you, Trev. I really, really would. And how many times has Trev said to me...
And how many times have you disappointed him?
Yeah, how many times has he said, there's no way John would do that? And then I went and fucking
Yes, he did.
So this is the last chance, Trev. Steve's locked in. Are you sure you don't want to change your mind now?
I'm locking in, man. Don't let me down.
Okay. Steve's got his worry beads ready. Okay, so...
Stop playing with your worry beads. You just mentioned gonads in story one and he's away.
Scientists warned that Wi-Fi connected laptops can ruin your gonads. It's a true story. Story number three, the poor Welsh girl who unfortunately did die. She dropped her hairdryer in. I made it up, guys.
Yes!
Oh, you're right. Yes. You're right. However, I would admit that if there had been a story about a Welsh girl dying, I would have included
it. You would have run it, wouldn't you?
I would have run it. Yeah, I have no shame. It could have been my next door bloody neighbour for 20 years and I'd have run that one.
Because it would have been your missus and you'd have run it.
Yeah, after the funeral.
Obviously, pay some respect, isn't
it? It's got to have some respect. Right? So there you go. So congratulations, guys. You got me.
Yay.
Told you it wasn't as good as last week, didn't I?
No, you're right, it wasn't.
Oh, so that
good.
Poor woman. That's a tricky thing, though, the teacher. What do you do in those circumstances? Because if a man had accidentally given out some porn where he was doing somebody, well, do you think he'd keep his job? No way he would. So is the woman being sacked?
It's Argentina. It's
ongoing at the moment, and there was an added.
It's different in South America.
There was a little bit more. There was a little bit more to the story, in so much that there's been complaints from the parents about it anyway, because apparently
the sound quality is just rubbish.
There's ghosting.
They didn't like the music. It was that horrible electronic 80s music. They didn't like it. No, apparently her and her boyfriend have been seen canoodling and being amorous on the school property, you know, to and from school, and the parents didn't like it. So this isn't helping her case, I don't think. So I would imagine that she'll end up losing her job. This is completely different, however, to the story that we did not too long ago about the teacher who had been in a porn film.
Yeah.
The difference was he didn't bring it into school and show it to the kids.
No.
Yeah, when the kids were all saying what I did on my summer holidays, he didn't decide to show all them.
No, exactly. So I'm gonna take a bit of a liberty after congratulating you guys, and I'm gonna move on to the next story because we gotta do this. We all want to talk about this.
Can I slip mine in, as it were? Because it is very quick.
Go on then, slip it in.
I just watched the tones lower, do you see? Because we're a bit more highbrow, aren't we?
Okay.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we had the story of the Zimbabwean man getting rather amorous with the donkey?
Yeah.
With a woman who then turned into a donkey.
Sorry. Correct, yes, this is true.
No, the judge said that was not true.
Well, another Zimbabwean man this week got the shock of his life when, you know how it is, guys. You know,
when his donkey turned into a woman.
No.
he couldn't get into town.
Your marriage is on the rocks, you know, you're having a difficult time at home, missus nagging you, you know, so what you do, you go, well, I'm going to book myself into a hotel room, and I'm going to order myself a hooker, cheer myself up.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. We've
I
all
know
done
where
it,
this is
know.
Going.
And so here we go, Mr. Mr. Titus Nakube.
Titus?
Titus.
Okay. So, oh, wow. Titus Nakube. Real porn name. Okay.
Was his missus the hooker?
Checks into the room.
Don't spoil it, Trev. I'm going to edit you out, you twat.
I guessed that. Is that actually true?
No. Mr. Nakube. It's better. Checks into the room. and the lady of the night does turn up. Only to turn out to be his 20-year-old daughter.
No!
How's that for awkward?
God.
That could be a Harp advert.
It could be a Harp advert, yes. So anyway...
Did they both say in unison, "Don't tell Mum"?
Well, apparently Titus passed out and the girl ran away.
She gave him the kiss of life. What a bitch.
Exactly. You know, what would you do in those circumstances, guys, you know?
Well, first of all, as a father, I'm her biological pimp and I'd want to be cut in on it. Secondly, yeah, don't tell the mother. Yeah, you'd have to do a deal, surely.
Well,
unless the mother knew.
The mother did find out. But you know, it's all good. It's all good because apparently, Titus, the gentleman that he is, has forgiven his daughter for her chosen profession. So it's okay. It's okay, guys.
Oh,
it's okay.
Well done, Titus.
Yeah.
It would have been horrible if they just kind of felt awkward and thought, shit, we might have to just go through with it.
Well, yeah, you know.
Because, you know, people do weird things in awkward moments, don't they?
Well, Dad, you know, you're on the clock.
Come on.
Just run in.
My Yorks are out, so that's it. You're not getting your deposit back. And talking of deposit, can you put this on, please?
Oh, yeah, she's going to put it on the laptop computer. There we go. That jumped in. So yeah, that was my story. Sorry, I had to go with
bizarrely,
that.
Bizarrely, it could have got even worse.
What, like his mother or something?
What if he had had some special requests? And she went in and he was bent over the bed, all chained up.
Oh yeah, she did see his face, yeah.
And she had a strap on and was doing him while he yelled out, "I'm a useful engine, I'm a useful engine." And she would be thinking, "I know that voice."
We're getting inside the Trev's life here, aren't we?
How horrible would that be if you're thinking,
say that
one more time. I'm a fish. Sorry, he's got a ping pong ball in his mouth.
To be fair to Trev, though, he can get around this happening to him by always asking for Chinese women. That's okay. The safe bet, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Is that, make that your request. You're not going to bump into any of your family.
True.
Drew.
Well, you say that as if none of my family are Chinese. Apparently, isn't it one in five people are? More than five people in my family?
That's a good chance, Trev. Good chance.
Yeah.
It's a fair point.
Isn't it
Tommy Cooper joke.
No, yeah, but that's like, you know, when they say like one in ten people's gay, and then, you know, everyone starts looking around the room.
Yeah.
You're like,
it's not me.
Yeah.
Not me.
Well, there's 10 of us. It's got to be one of us.
One in three people suffers from erectile dysfunction. And I'll tell you, boys, I'm rock solid right now. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Should we move on to a more serious story? Although I think this is going to be quite funny anyway. Is the news today that yet again Jeremy Clarkson's had something very important to tell us.
Girl Jezza. Oh.
Now, I just wanted to point out that I actually wrote stuff down to talk about this because I had to get these points in. Now, the story for me is not that Jeremy Clarkson said something stupid. It's the way that Unison acted. And the funny part for me is that Unison decided to ask for his summary dismissal rather than asking that maybe he would...
Especially he's a public sector worker as well.
Yeah. Not maybe that they might want to go and, you know, have a kind of ACAS arbitrary kind of thing going on. No. They just want him fired on the spot, you know. No comebacks, just get rid of him. So what were your thoughts on this, Trev? Apart from he's a cock.
Well, thankfully, I'm fairly sure we're small enough scale that we don't have to take the high ground of let's not give him the oxygen of publicity. I think he's already got a platform. You know, we're not really helping him at all. But he says things in order to be a cock. And he's succeeded. He's getting news coverage all over the place. He's very, very happy. He's very wealthy. What does he care? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's all going according to plan for him. I think he's an absolute arse. I don't think he's as much of an arse as he makes himself out to be. But given that he's actually personal friends with David Cameron, I may have to rethink that position.
Hmm. Now, Steve, if you think about it, right, Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross, they did something which, to be fair, I would say isn't as really as bad as you know, suggesting that we execute 2 million people in the UK. So what are your thoughts?
Well, that's
on
all a matter of perspective, isn't it? You know? I fully support the Day of Action. I'm a member of the union.
So you support them with their idea that they should.
Well, no, that's what I was coming on to.
All right, okay.
But I do think they've kind of lost a bit of sense of humour over this and maybe blown it out of proportion. Because at the end of the day, Clarkson is a shock jock. That's all he is. Yeah? Is there anybody who really takes what he says seriously? Because, you know, you just can't. You know, the guy, if you took him seriously, I mean, the guy's just a raving idiot.
Right, well, hang on. Let me just remind you, and people should be reminded of this, because after what he said today, I'm sure a lot of people are feigning some kind of offence. This is the same guy that lots of people wrote on a petition that they want to see him as Prime Minister of this country.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
you know, especially after his, you know, great work at integration with other societies and his comments about Mexicans, for example, earlier this year. I just think, you know, I don't, not apologising or making apologetics for him because I think what he did was wrong, but at the end of the day, let's not blow it out of all proportion. Let's not give him more of a platform to work on, because that's exactly what he's after. As Trevor said, the guy's a self-publicist. He said something to deliberately go out and shock people and offend people, which he's done, and now he can just sit back and bask in the afterglow.
Yeah. And does he not think that the 2 million public sector workers that he wants to off or suggested should be offed watch Top Gear?
Well, precisely.
I mean, how many people listen to Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand? I think it was like something like 300,000 or something stupid like that, and yet he's managed to, you know, so that's, yeah.
Well, they shouldn't have been fired because they did the thing live, realised immediately that it was distasteful and called back to apologise, and then it was left to the editor of that show to decide to broadcast, and if anybody should have gone, it should just have been him. But with Clarkson, because it was broadcast live, then I don't like to insist on an apology because then you get a not apology and it's crap.
Well, he has apologised now, hasn't he, tonight?
Oh,
well, to be honest, I think if he actually believed
it... In that case, I've got no problem with him.
Well, no, to be honest, if he actually believed that, or he felt that it was a joke and it was a good joke, I don't think he really has anything to apologise over. It's his opinion, and I think he's got the right to voice
it.
Freedom
of speech, isn't it?
The only thing I would ask is that in respect, you know, in context... For me, it was a joke. I don't think he really wants to see people executed in front of their children.
No.
But also, in the context of, you know, the current some of the stupid things going on, like the Twitter joke trial, it's quite interesting that somebody threatens to blow up an airport in obviously a jokey context. If you actually looked at all the tweets, and they get found guilty, I'll be interested to see what happens to Mr. Clarkson, who lot of people.
Yeah, but if he said it on Twitter, he'd been screwed. Because you've been breaking the Communications Act. But, you know, say it live on television.
Broadcast. The program was broadcast.
The Communications Act doesn't include broadcast.
He'd be absolutely fine. It's just no problem at all.
So if he had, and there'd been a police complaint, they wouldn't have had any choice apart from to do him for it.
Threatening to kill 2 million
because
people.
Because a guy just turned up and said that he thought that some dead teenager was a slut and he ended up in prison. So... next time.
Well, I think what he's hoping for is that this kind of thing would happen. The unions would say, how dare he, sack him immediately. And then next series of Top Gear, he would say, who would represent me in a tribunal? The unions would. Ha ha ha, everybody have a laugh at the unions.
Oh. There you go.
I think that's where he was hoping to go with that. If he was planning that far ahead.
No, I don't think he was. I think he was just saying stupid things on telly.
Yeah, which he does every single time he's on telly, which is why I can't believe people have taken offence at it, to be honest with you, because that's what he does.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is, the BBC are not going to censure him, rightly or wrongly, because he's paid a gazillion pounds a year and makes a gazillion pounds a year for the company as well. You know, Top Gear, I think, is their...
Well, Jonathan Ross made him a few quid, surely.
But no, I think Top Gear is their most syndicated programme around the world.
This is true.
And absolutely rakes them in a fortune. There's absolutely no way that they would treat Clarkson the same way they treated Jonathan Ross.
Do you think maybe, however, this might have a kind of last strawness about it, in so much that some of the comments that
No, not at all. Look at the comments he's made over the last, you know, years. His comments are always misogynist. You know, they're generally quite frequently racist.
He doesn't like lorry drivers.
Exactly, you know, he will continue to get away with it as long as Top Gear continues to make money for the BBC.
Okay. Right, well, I'm thinking, who else has got a story?
Well, how about that, the thing that, the homework you gave us? Ladies and gentlemen, lovely listeners, we were told, we were commanded to read
a three-line whip.
And yeah, and don't just read it fast, don't just skim read it, have a proper read, you lazy buggers, he said to us.
Yeah,
so we did.
Let me just, hang on. Do you want to do another story? Because I got to bring this one up.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, then, just very quickly, because you know, I've just seen it's made me mad as I've read it. Janice Atkinson Small, Daily Mail, Right Minds blog, sacked a UK BA staff and employ our recently redundant armed forces personnel. That's right, folks. She is suggesting that the people who legally went on strike should be sacked, and they should be replaced by the armed forces staff who've recently been made redundant. Can you imagine that? You know, being at a check-in, being welcomed by, you know, somebody who's trained to kill, you know, step over the red line, bayoneted or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It's just absolutely ridiculous. What a stupid woman.
I think that's brilliant. They probably had an editorial meeting in the Daily Mail offices where they're saying, these strikes are terrible. We should bring in the army. And she said, hang on. Right. I've got an idea.
Yeah, but Trev, listen to this. This is the final paragraph.
Bring in the ex-army.
This is the final paragraph of said blog. Britain is in a financial crisis. We cannot afford strikes. Sack the UK BA staff and put them on benefits. Who strike, the rest will obviously sign a no-strike agreement, and the vacancies can be filled by our recently redundant armed forces personnel. Mr. Moore talks tough, but whether this Conservative Cameron-led government will have the courage to take on the unions as Mrs. Thatcher did, we will have to wait and see. Exactly. That's how he says it all, Trev.
I'd just like to put in one little opinion. I've been watching the news about the strikes. And you know the public's opinion of them, and they always go and interview, you know, hard-working people who, you know, had to take off the day off work, you know, because their kids couldn't go to school. And it's I found it highly ironic that the parents are often quoted saying, well, you know, all these strikers, you know, they basically they're not thinking of anybody else. They're ruining this country, you know, the economy, and we've got to stay off home, you know, stay off work and stay home with the kids. But they didn't see the irony, and basically their entire complaint was they didn't think about me.
Yeah, yeah.
At all.
The fact that they're not getting paid for striking, but those people who are off are actually getting paid.
Yeah.
For it.
Getting paid leave or whatever.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Oh, so selfish. Well, so selfish.
I loved how Cameron described the whole event as a damp squib to try and make it sound like nothing was achieved. When clearly, if he's talking about a damp squib, what that means is there were no explosions. So he's actually asking for more riots. David Cameron, not me. I'm not saying there should be more riots.
He's
David
inciting Cameron, the country to riot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And not just that way.
Did he put that on Twitter? Because he could be arrested for that.
I also thought it was very humorous. And I hope a lot of people noticed it, how he seems to... And Rhys Morgan tweeted this today, so... But he tweeted it in a very good way. He said, can't believe David Cameron thinks that public servants and taxpayers are a mutually exclusive group.
Yes. I was going to actually make that same point from having read Reese's tweet earlier.
Yeah.
that, you know, he seems to forget that the people who are striking are taxpayers and are the squeezed middle who he so frequently talks about.
Yeah, so...
Yes, exactly, because if they're going on strike, it necessarily means that they have a job. So they're not just layabouts, you know. They're not the scroungers.
These lazy scrounging strikers, yeah, exactly.
If it was somebody on the dole who went on strike, nobody would have a problem with that.
Okay, I found the story, and I'm terribly sorry for being lax on it, but here we go. Now, this is the slight most highbrow part of the podcast. So if you just tuned in for the knob gags and spot the fake, you may as well turn off now. No, I'm joking. Don't listen. You might get educated and shit.
Just right. Fast forward for 5 minutes.
But at this point, I would just like to point out, before we do start, John, expect a better effort next week. Because not only have you lost your main story for the night, which you made me and Trev go and read, and sent us an email, you know, threatening us if we didn't read
it. I didn't threaten you.
Not only that, your spot the fake just was not up to its usual standard. So I think you need to have a good, long, hard look at yourself.
Right. Let's
and
just
come back next week in a better frame of mind, in a better state.
Should we just look at this in context, Steve? Of, you know. Pot and
kettle. But people expect that of me. They expect more of you, Jonathan.
Okay.
You're like a naughty balloon child.
What?
You know, get told off by the headmaster. The school full of balloon children. The naughty balloon child gets told off. He says, "You've let the school down, you've let me down, but worst of all, you've let yourself down." Sorry, I love that.
So, better effort next week, John.
In the Guardian, in the comment is free this week, alongside our friend Rhys Morgan getting his piece published. There was also a piece published by Julian Beghini, who is some kind of, I don't know, someone says he's a bit of a philosopher or something, although I'll leave that up to people's own, you know, make their own mind up. But Julian Beghini's been defending, I don't know, like religious apologists. And he's been telling the likes of Chris Hitchens and Richard Dawkins that they're attacking a straw man of religion, perhaps, and that they're looking at things too simplistically, I will say. I know I get the word right in the end. And so what he's done is he's decided that if he can define respectable religion... and then find people to say, yeah, this is me, then he will, in a way, kind of show that there is some respectable religious people out there. So he's basically come up with 4 points, and I'll just go through them quickly, just so we know what the 4 points are. The first one, to be religious is primarily to assent to a set of values and or practice a way of life and or belong to a community that shares these values and practices. Any creeds or factual assertions associated with these things, especially ones that make claims about the nature and origin of the natural universe, are at most secondary and often irrelevant. Number 2. Religious belief does not and should not require the belief in any supernatural events that have occurred here on Earth, including miracles that break natural laws, resurrection of the dead, yada, yada, yada. Number 3, religions are not crypto or proto-sciences. Basically saying that they shouldn't make claims about the physical universe, and basically science has the last say on everything. And number 4, religious texts are the creation of the human intellect and imagination. None can be taken as expressing the thoughts of a divine or supernatural mind that exists independently of humanity. So... I don't know who to go to first. Go on, I'll go to Trev first, because you're probably going to have a...
I've just got a little bit written.
Okay, cool.
About those 4 tenets that he's got there are feeble. And they describe any little group as much as it does a religion. It could describe a Battlestar Galactica fan club. And I've proved it, because they'll follow point 1, we all agree that the Battlestar Galactica remake is far superior to the first one. We do not feel shat upon by the ending that some people see as lame. Splitters! And we agree that Katie Sackhoff is a fox. For point 2, we do not necessarily believe that this all has, in fact, happened before or will necessarily happen again. Angelic messengers are a lot sexier in Battlestar Galactica, but not really real. For For the third one, while we can choose to believe, if we wish, that humanity is in fact a human Cylon hybrid, if science disproves the fact, we will accept that. And number four, Battlestar Galactica is the creation of Ronald D. Moore, not a god. Or 12 gods. Clearly the word is not infallible. In fact, we accept that the finale was a bit shit. So say we all. There you go. Just being a fan of Battlestar Galactica makes you a religion, according to those four things. Bloody nonsense. I can't see the point of the article. Is he trying to get all of the nice ineffectual religious over to one side of the room so he can blow the rest out of an airlock? What is he trying to do? He's defying nothing.
Yeah. For me, number one just fell down immediately with it's just a set of values, because that's any ideology. That's politics. So, Steve, have you got a take on it?
My take, not quite as Battlestar Galactica based as Trev's, but is actually exactly the same. I cannot see any point for the article at all. It's just a waste of paper or digital print or whatever it is that we're reading it on. It's so woolly and fluffy. It's pointless.
So where would you say
it could just be saying, we all agree that we all like air, and air is a good thing. Therefore, let's all agree on that. Brilliant. That's basically
oxygen supporters.
Yeah, exactly.
So where on those four do you think your own views, come a cropper?
Well, from my point of view, okay.
I don't think they do they? I don't think anyone's good.
No, really,
that's what I mean is, Steve identifies as a Christian, as a religious person.
Yeah.
I guess we
would disagree, really, would be on point two, because obviously he says religious belief does not and should not require the belief that any supernatural events occur here on Earth, but they can happen on Mars, by the way, including miracles that bend or break natural laws, the resurrection of the dead, or visible gods. Well, obviously Christianity is based on the basis that Christ is resurrected. So there's an instant disagreement there for every Christian. No Christian can say, yes, actually those four points, I totally agree with them. Because the whole basis of Christianity really is that Christ was resurrected. So
I think the only people who might classify themselves as religious who might say, yes, these four things are definitely me and my way of thinking would be the sort of agnostic Jews, the ones who will still go for the tradition and the society, and like the idea of Judaism constantly renegotiating a contract with God, with whatever your personal view of God is.
Oh, like the cultural Jews then, basically.
Yeah. But don't want to necessarily discard it and call themselves atheists. I think that's probably as far as they would go. Everybody else surely would have to have some of point two in there. Otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly. I mean, I can kind of take points three and four, to be honest with you. But
not being funny, but I don't know, because number three, if you think about it, number three does say that science would say that coming back from the dead is not natural, it's not possible.
No, it's true.
So again, I think you may fall a cropper of that one as well.
Yeah, absolutely, possibly. Yeah.
I mean, all right, four is just, are you a literalist or not? But I think, thinking about it, Steve, you may come a cropper in two.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, absolutely, I mean... Rather bizarrely, I kind of wasn't thinking of resurrection had been a miracle, but clearly, But I was looking at that as being the sort of
you're thinking like creation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it goes a lot deeper.
Of course it does. Right. No, you're right. You would come a cropper on that as well. So, and obviously, so basically, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking. He's written these four rules and these four definitions, and they're already taking out three of the major religions.
So do you think that his...
It's just pointless.
Do you think his point, basically, because he's not defining religion, he's defining what he's trying to say, a respectable religion,
yeah,
is this. So do you think that he's basically saying, in not so many words, that no religion is respectable?
Well, I guess so, yeah, because, I mean, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert on all religions, I don't pretend to be an expert on Christianity, to be honest with you. But, you know, point four, obviously the regard and the respect which Muslims have for the Quran, obviously that takes them out of the equation straight away. And talking about, you know, creeds and factual assertions, well, Judaism with their creation story and with their laws, and the Pentateuch, that sort of takes them out of it. So that's three of the major religions gone. Then you look at something like Hinduism, you know, and you're looking at...
But, oh, I tell you what, though. I think what he's trying to do is he's not talking about necessarily the orthodox views, okay? Right, because you just said, like... The Muslims
should not require that you have to believe all this stuff in order to be a part of the religion.
Yeah. What he's trying to say, basically, is not necessarily that there's no one religion out there that doesn't fit this, but he's saying there's not actually one person who says, oh, I'm a religious person or I have a faith, who can actually agree to all of this without them actually basically saying, oh, actually, I'm not religious. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, even if you got somebody who was not a literalist... Okay, so they can sit with number four, you know, and, you know, they can go with number one. Basically, for me, this all boils down to the supernatural. And for me, that's where I think I draw the line.
And but you see, then, for me, then, the whole point of religion and having a belief is faith-based. And that faith, whether, you know, you can suspend reality or not, I suppose you have to at some point with faith. And that's the point of it, you know, you believe in something, so yes, you do believe that miracles can happen. You do believe that, you know, supernatural things then can happen. And I think anyone who has, and that I guess is faith. You know, you believe in that, even though you cannot prove it.
But I think as soon as you invoke faith, you might fall foul of what he thinks is reasonable. So again,
but yeah, you're not excluding yourself by. Having any of these things. He's saying that religion shouldn't require that everybody in the religion has to believe all these things. Like, it does not require the belief that supernatural events have occurred. You can believe that they occurred.
But that's but what makes it so pointless, though, Trev.
Yeah, unfortunately, if what he's saying is all religions should follow these, then that means that you could have a whole bunch of Muslims and Jews in the same church in the Middle East, and they're all worshipping perfectly happily until somebody gets up to speak, and then I think the place would kick off, wouldn't it? Because what are they going to talk about? Hello, we're all nice and religious, aren't we? Everybody fancy a game of Risk?
I as I say, I go back to what I said earlier, I just kind of just don't see the point of the article, really.
Yeah. It was pretty lame, to be fair. And, you know, I enjoyed his book, you know, The Pig That Wants to Be Eaten and 99 Other Philosophical Ideas. But I think he's just pandering too much, really. I don't know what he's up to, but it's boring. So, it's less boring now we've talked about it, but...
In a religious conversation, whenever you spend too much time talking about the definitions, you're pretty much lost. You're not going to get anywhere in the argument because people will end up just whining about minutiae of what words mean.
I don't want to pigeonhole Stephen at all, but not in fairly, if an Anglican can't agree with that shit, then obviously it's well dodgy. You know, I mean, he's given everyone every chance there, to be fair, to be part of it. Just let me check my stories. Does anybody else have anything they want to talk about?
Well, we should mention that David Cameron seems to be trying to turn the word, the phrase left wing, into a negative.
Yes, yeah. Accusing Ed Miliband of being left wing.
Oh, is he still trying
to? In between two dreadful words. Brilliant.
The other thing, again, it's just a bit of randomness, really, and kind of telling you what I was saying earlier, but again, it's about David Cameron, and it's about the strikes again, and his reference to the strikes being a damn squib. I think the figures are something like this. What is it? 6.5 million public sector workers, I think. And 2 million of those went on strike. So pretty much 1 in 3 went on strike. So 1/3 of the workforce. That's not really a damn squib, is it?
Not really, no.
So it's just interesting how people like Cameron try and put a spin on things. I was having a conversation with somebody about this in work yesterday, actually. It's interesting that they put this sort of spin on things and people lap it up without even thinking about it.
Like they lap up things that Jeremy Clarkson says.
Yeah, absolutely.
Normally, when he's not saying how we should kill people.
It's, you know, they're going to lap up that comment. This camera just said, oh, yeah, it was a damn squib. Yes, David, it was. Whoa. It's not, though. You know, it patently is not a damn squib, but yet people are going to jump on that and go, yeah, yeah, it was. Oh, so those unions, what are they doing for us, you know?
And you'd have thought people would have learnt not to believe everything that comes out of a politician's mouth.
Exactly.
But this is also the week they've confirmed they've started filming the next series of Red Dwarf.
Yes.
Yay.
Which is good news.
Although also worrying as well. Because I love
Red
Dwarf.
Back on form, please.
Red Dwarf is brilliant. However, the last series of Red Dwarf
back
and then the last mini-series, the Back to Earth, were dreadful.
Okay, well, although it
hasn't been good in Series 6, I don't think.
Yeah, well, although it is going to be another Dave Enterprise, the good news is that they're going to be filming it in front of a live audience again, so hopefully...
Which they haven't done since Red Dwarf 4.
No, so they'll be bringing back a lot of the character acting, hopefully, live action. Hopefully that'll be able to capture the old school nature. And just to finish, if none of you have got any more stories, I just wanted to remind us of one of the stories this week, which was the racist rant on a...
yes.
On a train. Was it a train or a tram?
Tram, they said in the article, yeah.
Well, there was one on a train and one on a tube and one on the tram.
One on the tube where a young lady with her child on her lap decided to tell all the ethnic minorities around her that they should all go home.
Which was pretty much everyone on the train, actually.
Which was pretty much on the train. What she didn't realise is if they did go home, then the train would have been unprofitable and she would have had to walk to work.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I've seen some people on Facebook saying it seems a bit dodgy the way clip after clip is now showing up of women being caught ranting. I don't think it is dodgy because after one circulates on the net, if you're out and you see somebody start to kick off, then you're going to film it and say, oh, it'll be like that other one.
Yeah.
I don't think people are ranting more. They're just being filmed more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. Because as well as that, if it were faked, who benefits from this? You know, the BNP and people like it still look like twats. True. If it were some... reasonable liberal person, then she was saying these dreadful things over a child's head and upsetting everybody in the carriage.
If it was
and there were loads of kids there as well, so I don't see how that would have been prohibitively expensive to actually do with all actors. It's ridiculous. And yeah, I don't get what purpose it would serve.
It just
I think there just are racist morons out there, and thankfully there are just more cameras now.
However, apparently she ended up in jail over this.
She's been arrested, charged, yes.
What do you think about that? We never got round to the Clarkson thing in so much that Unison were calling for him to be arrested, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think equally ridiculous that she's been arrested for this.
No, I don't think it is ridiculous. Because it's quite clear that Clarkson is a gobby tool on the telly. But if Clarkson just went into a pub and he had a bunch of mates around and then he started pointing over to a table full of people that he wanted to belittle and shout scorn at, then that's a very different, very threatening kind of a thing.
Do you think these people were generally threatened by a single mother and her child?
In that particular instance, maybe not. But,
that's the instance we're talking about, though, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But I you have to apply laws
but
to
I think she's,
whether
she's,
or not saying it is risky. And I think it is risky for situations like that. But unfortunately, that would mean it would apply in this situation.
I may be wrong on this, so I'm quite happy for you to correct me if I am. But isn't it actually illegal anyway to swear in public?
Well, no, because...
I'm sure there was something about it, cause police... always bring it up when they're trying to arrest somebody who swears at them. They always
give them a few chances. So, but if it was just illegal,
no, but they put that on the charge sheet.
Well, no, fine. But you can swear in public and a cop might come up to you and say, don't do that.
Hmm.
What I'm saying is, right, if she's going to get done for something mundane, like disturbing the peace, yeah. I'm wondering why there's not a lot of other things where people are getting done for disturbing the peace. Again, she's been offensive, fair enough. But I don't understand. She's not... If Trev... Are you trying to say that she's threatening in some way?
Yeah, like, it is threatening because she was asked to stop. And people were saying that they found it offensive and she carried on and was pointing at all of them. And...
So, I don't know because...
And it's genuinely aggressive as well.
Yeah. Just because she wasn't 20 stone with a tattooed forehead doesn't mean she isn't behaving in a threatening fashion.
Right, so you're going for tone, Steve. Yeah. You don't like the tone.
Well, no, just her whole demeanour is what I'm saying. Her whole demeanour was aggressive.
Well, I think you can see people riled like that quite often, and just because someone else is offended by it, and they're doing it, you know, quite loudly, I think it's, you know, I hate to get all slippery slope on us, but I think it's, to be honest, it's pretty tame, I think.
If a law was enforced that said, on the bus or the tram, sit down and just shut the fuck up, or you go to prison, I would love that law. Sorry, mate, I would. People talking loud on their phones, starting conversations with people who clearly don't want to talk to them.
Oh, that's the nutter factor, though. That's different.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Wouldn't that be great if people would just shut the fuck up on public transport?
To be fair, and all right, well, I'll take the sidestep, Trev. We'll drop this story. But I just wanted to say that those people on the train, okay, not been funny, when I'm on the train and I'm looking out the window with a blank expression on my face and my earphones in, that usually means I don't want to talk to you.
You sure? Because I always take that as being...
That's like a red flag to something.
Come on, have a chat. You're asking for it, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Have a chat.
They think I'm just like my knob hanging out and they're like going, hey, do you want me to play with that for you? No, no, it's okay, it's okay. I'm just looking out the window. But seriously, what, you know, no, don't talk to me in the morning. Don't talk to me before 10 a.m. I'll say that to my work colleagues as well. Don't bother. Okay, let's wrap this up. Go on then, Steve, wrap it up.
Okay, fine, yeah. Being as you know, this is another part where you're letting down the team again this week. So that's fine, I don't mind covering for you yet again, John.
You're going to tell them how they can email us as
well. I would just say thanks for listening again this week, folks. You can, of course, follow our exploits through Twitter. Although I haven't really tweeted anything for a very, very long time. Probably because I've lost the password. But I can read your tweets. So please feel free to tweet us at ThinkRant. You can also follow us on our blog, which is thinkrant.blogspot.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook, on our Facebook group. So please do get involved. Join our little community. Leave comments. Leave us suggestions. Leave us things to rant about. Things you might like to rant about. But yeah, thanks for listening.
And you can also email us info@thinkrant.co.uk.
And there we go. You can also email us thinkrant, .co.uk.
That was very kind of you, Steve, to leave that little extra nugget for him.
Yeah, that's what I thought I'd do. Just give him a chance to redeem himself and get back in there, Trev, to be honest with you.
You're too kind.
I know. I know. I do my best, Trev.
Okay. Thanks so much for listening.
Working with amateurs, though. Do you know what I mean? Well, sorry. An amateur. Sorry, Trev. You know. Professionals such as yourself, I shouldn't lump in with...
Hang on, didn't you last week say I'm going to go and listen to the Trevor Williams that's funny?
Yeah, it doesn't mean he's not professional, though.
Oh, he's a professional but not funny comedian.
Yes.
Professional tedious shit. Excellent, I'll take that.
Okay, well, thanks very much for listening, people. I'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Cheers.